Welcome to Living Life in the Anne, for the woman who is set on getting everything she effing deserves. I am your host, Dr. Stephanie D. Barnes, your best life transformation strategist. I help women to get everything they desire and deserve in life by equipping them with powerful strategies for immediate implementation to achieve fulfillment. Because life is too long to live unfulfilled. It's time. Girl, it's time. It's time for you to get everything you desire and deserve. It's time for you to live your life on purpose and to live a life of fulfillment, meaning, and joy. It's time. It's time for you to walk boldly in the power of your decisions. Because girl, if you're going to be in this world, you need to be fulfilled in this life. Life is too long to live unfulfilled. Join me for another episode of Living Life in the And, where you learn how to achieve fulfillment and commit to completing all the desires of your heart. Hey, it's your girl, Dr. Stephanie D. Barnes, and it's time for another episode of Living Life in the End, a Living Leaders series. You know, it's hard to operate in the and when society tries to put us in a box of or. Women constantly face the division of woman or wife, mother, lover, or career woman, rather than the celebration of the trinity of woman and wife, mother, lover, and career woman, all in one person, one woman, yet many. We must learn to live life in the and. We can't operate in the or, but operate in the A and B. Living life in the and helps women to truly have it all. The Living Life in the And Living Leaders series is designed to have pointed conversations with women doing great things in the world. Women on every continuum of the spectrum, housewives, skilled workers, professionals, and executives, and everything in between. Not only is this a great conversation, but a quest for the Holy Grail. What does a successful life mean to modern day women? We get the up close and personal of how these women are living their lives in the end. Are you ready? Are you ready to live life in the end and get everything in life you deserve? Let's get it. Well, as always, I am excited about our guest. I am so thrilled to have none other than my good friend, Dr. Erica Mills, to join us for a conversation about how she lives her life in the and. Welcome, Erica. Welcome to Living Life in the And.
Good afternoon to everyone listening. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Barnes.
All right. So great to have you on here. And I want to just share a little bit about who Dr. Erica Mills is. She's a native of Moss Point, Mississippi, and currently resides in Atlanta, Georgia, with her adult son and her standard poodle puppy. Dr. Mills attended Mississippi Gulf Coast Community College for her associate's degree in nursing and went on to pursue a bachelor's of science in nursing from the University of South Alabama. But she didn't stop there, y'all. She earned her master's of science in nursing and her doctor of philosophy degree from William Carey University. She is a registered nurse of 17 years. Dr. Mills is a nationally board-certified nurse professional development specialist, and she has expertise in nursing education, administration, and project management. She currently serves on the board of directors for the Georgia Nurses Association, but y'all, she is a professional writer, entrepreneur, and avid traveler. I love to look on her Facebook page to see where in the world is Dr. Mills today. She is, of course, very well lauded with recognitions, including a recent award where she received the Deborah Arise Forerunner Award from Boss Babes Who Pray. And y'all, she doesn't just take care of people and help people take care of people as a nurse. She is an Atlanta-based realtor as well. She is truly living her life in the end. So, Erica, Dr. Mills, I call you both because, you know, you're my girl, Erica, but yes, you are Dr. Mills.
Absolutely.
It is time for the who, the what, and the why. So, of course, I've shared your bio, but tell us who really is Dr. Erica Mills, what it is you really do, and why you live your life in the end.
Well, who I am, I refer to myself as E. People who really know me call me E most of the time. That makes me feel like the person before all of the degrees, before any of the awards, you know, just as a humility type of thing. I like that nickname. And I pride myself on being a person who has a giving heart. I know that in the world of givers, you're also going to have the takers, but I have learned how to govern that accordingly and scale back where I need to. But for the most part, I like to assess and find out where the needs are and to make it happen. I love nursing. I always say, even if I didn't get paid to do it, I would do it for free. So I know that it's a passion, it's a calling. I have been tremendously blessed outside of financial rewards. I have just seen some miracles take place in my career. And so I'm forever grateful for that. I've had so many networks built in and outside of the medical profession. As you mentioned earlier, I am a professional writer. I have helped so many scholars with editing and different type of scholarly projects as they, you know, progressed in their academia. I also have been editor, edited Toya Wright's book, How to Lose a Husband. That was one of my debuts into the writing world, but I have been writing for quite some time. I've always loved to write and to read. Mm-hmm. What else? What else am I doing? I want to help Black mothers, young Black mothers, old Black mothers, mothers become homeowners. So that's one of the reasons why I went into real estate. This is my second home that I bought. I actually had this one built, and I want to have others to experience that, fire their landlords and get some sense of financial security and get on their way to financial freedom. And why I live my life in the end, because I want it all and I know that I can have it all.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's so wonderful to really have this opportunity to talk to you in this forum, because, you know, we have had many conversations over the years and, you know, we met each other doing service. I don't know if you remember that. I don't know how long that was ago now, at least 10 years ago.
Yes.
We got to work together. I believe it was a project where we, was it Heals for the Soul?
Oh, yes.
Remember that. Yeah. So Heels for the Soul, where we ran in high heel shoes.
Oh, yes.
For domestic violence.
Yes. I remember that.
Yes. I always think, think back to that. It's so cool to serve with people, and it's wonderful to have met you in that capacity and to see you continuing to serve in other capacities. And, you know, I know you mentioned that one of your passions is helping mothers in particular to own their own homes. And, you know, that is something, you know, having recently bought a home myself as a single woman, because I've had homes before, but it was as a married woman. And I tell you, going through this process as a single woman is a whole something. I don't know how to describe just how right. how overwhelming and daunting that can be. And you know, it has given me a much greater appreciation for how important it is to help women in particular to equip themselves to be in a position to buy a home, because it's not something that is easy to do.
No, it's not.
And it's so great that you are now committing to helping other mothers to own their own homes. And of course, one of the things that has always just been such an admirable quality about you, you're very smart and have so many great accomplishments. And it's not, though, something that you didn't have kind of like the traditional pathway, I would say, to getting there. And you have been determined to have it all no matter what for quite some time. And you mentioned, you know, I shared with everyone that you have an adult son, but why don't you tell me about how you became a mother and just kind of that whole, what path that placed you on in terms of where you are today?
Well, thank you for asking that question, because oftentimes I leave that part out. I just start, you know, after nursing school. But I was pregnant at 16. My son's father and I were in a relationship for quite some time. But I had him at 17 as a junior going into my senior year. I had him in the summer. So I was able to go right back into school in August. I didn't miss any time. I graduated with honors on time, made all my appointments for when I got out of school. You know, he was a blessed child, I would say, because I had a cousin that was a year older than I was. And she actually sat out of going to college that first year so that she could watch my son for me while I went to my senior year. So I didn't have to put him in daycare or worry about any of that type of thing. She took really good care of him. So shout out to her. After that, it's just like a series of angels were put into my path to make sure that I didn't get discouraged, to make sure that I didn't feel like I had to give up. One person after the other just offered different things. I had all kind of assistance you can think of. I got an apartment. I had a little job, a little part-time job at Foot Locker. And my mom helped me out a lot. And when I finished high school, I went directly into the junior college. And he went to school or daycare at the junior college. So mm-hmm. I did that for 3.5 years, graduated. And it's so funny because at that time, because I'm a very goal-oriented person, what I did was I set all of my goals based on his goals and his milestones. Mm-hmm. So I said, by the time he goes to kindergarten, I'll be finished with this. By the time he mm-hmm. goes to, you know, this grade, I want to be finished with this degree. By the time, you know, all my milestones are based around him. He played lots of sports. You know, I was very active in the PTO. I did all types of things as he was growing up, team mom on every team, all kind of things like that. But I love the fact that the majority of my school and like my BSN program was completely online. My MSN and PhD programs were hybrid, which I went only once a month down there to Hattiesburg. So it just worked around my schedule, and I was able to work, be a mom, and be a student, and really, you know, continue to learn the profession that I just adore.
Right. And, you know, that's one reason of many that I had to have you on this podcast, because if you are not the living example of living life in the end, I don't know who is.
Oh, and thank you.
You are, Because, you know, when you listen to, you know, what you just described in terms of your determination to have it all, you know, you made a decision that even though you became a mother at 17, you became pregnant at 16, became a mother at 17, going into your senior year, you became determined that that wasn't going to be your defining moment in terms of, even though it is obviously a very pivotal point in your life, it wasn't a defining moment in your life that put you into this box of teenage mom and that's it. You know, you have pushed through to ensure that you were able to be all that you desire to be and not allow that circumstance to determine that you could not be all that you set out to be. So, you know, you spoke about being goal oriented. What do you think helped you to be determined that you could have it all? You know, because I'm certain that it's, you know, at some point you may have thought about the statistics that often are the defining aspect for teen mothers. You may have even experienced judgment from others, teachers, peers, people in the community, or just kind of, you know, thought for a moment that, oh my gosh, you know, how am I can't do what I set out to do because now I'm going to be a mother. But, you know, if you ever felt that pressure or that judgment or those thoughts, what did you use to be able to push past that and get on this track of where you worked, were a mom, a student, and eventually Dr. Erica Mills?
Well, I used wise counsel. I would also speak with, oftentimes I spoke with my dad, who always kept me straight. He'd always say, listen, you can do whatever it is that you want to do and whatever type of assistance you need, we're here for you. I had very, very supportive parents. My mom and my dad both, they fought with my son for quite some time when he was younger, because they knew that I needed to study or I needed my time, you know, things like that. But I also had, like I said, just all types of angels put in my path. I remember Ms. Millender back at Moss Point High School, they actually had a grant, and it's so crazy when I think about it. There was a grant called Visions, and I think it was only around for like the year and a half, 2 years that I was in it. And then after mm-hmm. that, they lost the grant. But what they did was they prepared us, anyone who was either expecting or a teen mom, they could go to this program, and it was during school hours, and they would just break down different pieces of what to expect as a young parent. Everything from finances to banking to choosing the right daycare to preparing to go to the hospital to insurance, all different types of things that you needed to know about parenting. And so that was really cool. We were able to come in and share our thoughts and our experiences with each other on a weekly basis. And then also my mom and my aunt, they also had really good friends who worked down at the county at the office down there. And so they were able to put me on assistance where I had my light bill being paid. I was in a based on income apartment. I got a stipend monthly to go to school. I had mm-hmm. gas money given to me. They bought uniforms. They paid for me to take my boards. I mean, mm-hmm. you name it, I had it. And so all of it to me was confirmation that I was headed in the right direction. And mm-hmm. And my support system was there to see me soar. And I just knew that everybody still believed in me and that it wasn't the end of the world, you know, that mm-hmm. it was just going to be hard for me. It wasn't impossible.
Right. And oh my gosh, when I say, you know, just your story is everything that I thought about when I began this commitment to helping women to live their lives in the end. You know, you're talking about how, you know, one, you had the mindset, first of all, that one, this isn't the end of the world. It'll be harder, but I can do it. Two, you had the right people.
Yes.
And were able to receive that because, you know, you, like you say, sought wise counsel and was receptive to that help. You know, you had the right systems in place. You know, you availed yourself of different opportunities to get the things you needed so that you could both be a mother and be a student and stay on track. And, you know, you stayed determined and you had, I love, you know, you, when you talked about aligning your milestones with your son's milestones.
Oh yes.
You know, you allowed that to be a guidance in your life in terms of aligning your desires with his progression. And, you know, I know how important it is just in general for women who have a goal, who desire to do more, who know that whatever they're doing right now is not it. It is simply something on the pathway to greater. At one point or another, you know, we're faced with that decision of, are we going to commit to getting to that goal, even though it's hard, or are we going to allow the fact that it's hard to be a, and I don't want to say excuse because I don't want to, I don't, for some reason in saying that, it feels like I'm being judgmental, but I don't desire to be, but just don't have that support, I suppose,
right,
to be able to realize that something being difficult is just that, it's something being difficult. You know, you were certainly blessed to have people to put you in connection with programs and services and support that enabled you to move forward. For the young lady out there who is a teen mom or is expecting and, you know, getting ready to go on this journey, who may not have the direct support, say, that you had.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to her, and how can she find that encouragement or a way to connect herself to those support systems and support services that can enable her to excel?
Well, you have to be resourceful. You know, if you don't have someone who can readily just spout out those ones that are available to you, look around in the area that you're in. You know, we have these handy cell phones that we can just go right on to Google or whatever our search browser is or search engine is and type in, you know, community resources or whatever type of resources it is that you're in need of. If it's daycare, a lot of times they have daycare assistance, they have housing assistance, they have electricity assistance. Like I said, that program that I was in, it was like a work study type of program. Mm-hmm. So I was getting credit for being in school, like I was working. And so they gave me a little stipend so that I, you know, had money in my pocket. I had gas, you know, like I said, they helped me with the uniforms, just whatever type of assistance it is that you're in need of, try to find out, reach out. It's okay to ask people as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's one of the issues that we have, especially in the Black community. Sometimes when we have resources, we don't readily share them and people don't think to ask, or they don't mm-hmm. want to ask because they're afraid that you may be, you know, looking down on them or judging them or what have you. Or sometimes, you know, people have been conditioned to feel like nobody wants to share the information. And I'm just the mm-hmm. opposite. Anything that I can do to help people or anything that I've been through already, let me give you the game. You know, let mm-hmm. me tell you exactly how to cut down on some of those steps or how to get through it, how to level up, how to, you know, I'm going to leave the door open, you know, for the mm-hmm. the people behind me. to come right on through. I have no problem with that. So they can, you know, reach out to me, reach out to others who have done it. I always say, like, it's very important to have mentors in all areas of your life. I have spiritual mentors, financial mentors, career mentors, relationship mentors. You know, it's okay to have different people in your circle serving different purposes, but you also have to have people in your life who've been where you're trying to go. You know, if you're the smartest person in your circle, then that circle is not growing, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
It's okay to befriend or to ask people if they'll take you on as a mentor. But you also have to be prepared to hear no sometimes too. If somebody has too much on their plate, you know, they may not be able to do it at that time, but you may be able to revisit it at a different time, or they may even offer somebody else in their place.
Right. Right. Because I think that it's so important for women in particular to embrace the fact that we don't have to do it by ourselves. And, you know, in a lot of my research and my coaching efforts and just general leadership development talks that I've had, you know, one of the things that I always try to emphasize is the importance of having a great team.
Yes.
You know, because I love the concept of women being the CEOs of their lives. When I started this whole journey, it was for the purpose of, one, I wanted to be a CEO myself. Mm-hmm. And two, I desired to help other women to become leaders and ultimately CEOs. But in that process, I learned how important it is to, you know, embrace this concept of basically being the CEO of your own life, meaning, you know, you have the ability to do great things and to lead yourself into excellence. But a lot of times people miss out on the fact that great CEOs always have great teams.
Yes.
You know, it's never the Lone Ranger. And I know I always date myself when I use the Lone Ranger as an example, but, you know, it's never one person out there doing it by themselves, at least not those who achieve high levels of success. Because certainly you can be successful doing it all by yourself, but
right.
You can be even more successful when you reach out for that help. And, you know, speaking of, you know, just being a resource for women in particular, teenage mothers as well, your doctoral research. Tell us a little bit about that and what led you to pick that dissertation topic and how and what you learned from that effort. You know, I'm a big nerd, so I always love to hear about research.
Of course. We have like minds in that capacity for sure. Now, the thing about it is, you alluded to it a little bit earlier about how some people may have felt that my decision to, you know, carry my pregnancy was whatever. Like, you know, say, for instance, if I had friends back then, their parents may have felt like, oh, you don't need to be her friend because, you know, she's pregnant and she's young, or she's, you know, having a baby out of wedlock and things like that. And so I did experience some of that. I had, you know, some people tell me, oh, you've messed up your whole life. I've had some friends to tell me, oh, my parents don't want me to be your friend anymore. You know, I've had different things happen over, you know, the period of my son is 22 now, 22 years. I could write a whole book on it. But I sought to do some research to see if that was unique for me or if that was occurring, you know, prevalently with the other teen mothers. So what I did was I tapped into a group at Moss Point of teen mothers, and I did do some research around their lived experiences with being teen mothers from a master's dissertation. And that was quite insightful. Several of them did have lots of, you know, bad situations that happened to them as a result of their decision to carry the baby to term. And some of it even had to do with their healthcare interactions. And I also wanted to highlight that because I know that I had a physician that every time I went in his office and I asked questions, because even back then I was reading and studying because I just, at first I wanted to be OBGYN myself. And so I knew a little bit about all of it by the time that, I was 16, but would ask him questions and he would always defer them to his nurse. Oh, you can ask the nurse. Oh, the nurse will talk to you about that. Oh, you can see that on your paperwork. Oh, you can read about it in your chart, things like that. And so I wanted to see if that was unique to me or if other people had experienced the same thing. And they had, which was very sad to hear. But I also learned a lot of other great things about their experiences around their parents, their friends, their support systems, who did they go to, who did they tell first, all those type of things. And then when I went on to get my doctoral degree, I wanted to expound on that research a little bit more. But what I decided to do this time was to look at it from the school nurse's perspective, because I know that they interact with teen mothers and teens who are experiencing STDs and other type of, life-changing, life-altering decisions and situations. And so I just wanted to talk to them and see what was going on in the schools, so I learned a lot about what the facilitators were for the nurses, being able to be involved in sex education. What was really happening in the room when they were delivering sex education. And then I also learned about what the barriers were and how different that even looks like on the reservations in Mississippi, because we have some Indian reservations, Native American. And so that was even insightful. But I could just go on and on and on with that group on those topics, because I just felt like people needed to know about it, know exactly what was happening in the minds of that population, so that we can really design policies and programs that will help them.
And it's so important because like the examples you gave of what you learned during your research as well as your own personal experiences about how important it is for people who are in positions to educate and elucidate, I'll say, how important it is for them to do that because not everyone has developed the courage to continue to persevere and ask questions when they ask someone that they trust and are basically, shooed away or their questions are not received in a positive way and they're not receiving the information they need to make good decisions. And then on the other side of that is how important it is for people not to judge just because one type of circumstance, has arisen in this case, teen pregnancy. We tend to, or society, tends to make certain judgments and put people in boxes that all of a sudden, because this circumstance has arisen, all that they're bad. And I'll use that in the a generic sense, but they want to kind of paint people as good or bad when really it's just a person experiencing one thing or another. I mean, it just happens that they're experiencing this at this particular time in their life, and if the same thing happened at a later time in different circumstance, they would get a different reception. So it's so important to, once you get in a position of influence and a position of being able to help others, to remember that, even if you've not experienced it yourself, that people shouldn't be judged. I mean, it's just a situation that's arising, and that's kind of what it is. So, you know, as you have made the transition from experiencing teenage pregnancy and being able to avail yourself of a support system and different services that helped you to achieve all that you set out to achieve, you know, what inspires you to do more? I mean, because, you know, you have achieved, or at 32, I believe it was, at age 32.
Yes.
Yes. At age 32, you achieved your doctorate. And that's something that, you know, most of the times they're a little bit older right. when that happens. But, you know, you achieved this terminal degree at age 32. What made you decide to go further than that? Wasn't that enough? And I say that to Jordan.
Well, you know, I personally get bored. I have a mind that I like to keep active. And also, like I said, I have a heart for giving back and for doing what is needed in the community. I am a Sagittarius, and most Sagittariuses that I know are busybodies, and we just like to do things. So I try to channel that energy and put it into positivity. Like you said earlier, I am on the board of directors for the Georgia Nurses Association. I am very, very, very much so involved and interested and a huge advocate of nurses being at the table when it comes to policy making around medical policies and different things that are coming down the pike, because the majority of the time the doctors are there, but the nurses are not represented. So the Georgia Nurses Association is the largest nursing association in the state. We are one of the chapters, or one of the, you know, we're the state-based association for the larger American Nurses Association. And I mean, there's, you know, millions, I think it's like 4 or 5 million nurses in the world. And so, you know, we're the collective voice. And so I like to be at the table when it comes time to have weigh-ins on what these policies are really saying, or what they need to say, or, you know, giving some, you know, opinions about that. But I just like to channel that energy and put it into whatever I can that's going to make a difference. I really want to leave, you know, a legacy of humanity, you know, being a humanitarian. And I even have done some work with, like, Keisha Knight Pulliam's Camp Kizzy. She does a girls empowerment camp every summer. I did that for about 6 years. I love to meet the young girls and see them, and they're impressionable. I would talk about, like, sex education with them a little bit, talk to them about puberty, a little bit about things that they need to know, some terms, and helping kind of dispel some of the myths, you know, when it comes to medically accurate information, and having a safe space, you know, to talk about those things. Of course, we got parental approval and consent for that. But I like to be involved in things that are going to make a difference. I really don't like wasting my time on earth or wasting my time in the day.
Right, right. And, you know, time is certainly something that's so precious, because it's the one asset that once it is expended, you literally cannot get it back. You
right.
can only try to use what time you have left. And that's also an asset where you can't necessarily quantify that. And so it is wonderful that you use your time to help others, and that, you know, you are in a position where you can use experiences that you've had to help others to, like, I think you said this early on, you know, maybe skip some steps and maybe be able to expend their energy on something else rather than repeating some of the, or facing some of the same obstacles that you have. So, you know, you talk a lot about your nursing career and how you have been able to use that to educate others, educate the young girls in the programs and the camps and different ways. But, you know, tell us more about your plans with this whole real estate effort or your expertise in real estate to help young mothers or help mothers to achieve their homes. It's funny, in all the times that we've talked, I don't know that I recall or that you've talked about this particular focus in your real estate goals. But I'll share, you know, one of my long-term goals is to help women and children to own their own homes. And even though I don't desire to, or I don't know how I desire to do that, but that's something, and this was even before I got on this path to get my own home, mm-hmm. but just helping women to break the chains of generational poverty and to position themselves for generational wealth. And one of my specific goals that I say to myself every day is owning real estate projects. I don't want to sell real estate, I don't think, but that is a long-term desire. So, this is yet another synergy between us and why we are goal friends, as you call it.
Yes, we are. Because every time we get together, it's like iron just sharpens the iron. We just I know I'm so thankful for every time that we get together and we just talk about what we're doing, how we can do it, how we can support it, and just pushing each other. Like, it's good to have friends like that. Mm-hmm. Not everybody understands it. Not everybody can, get into it, but, we're there on that level. I bought my first home fresh out of nursing school back in 2005. And at the time I was, I think, 22. And I had a really good young black realtor, young woman, Sonia. And she walked me right through the process. She didn't tell me a whole lot of stuff. She mostly handled everything. And I trusted her. And that's what I always say too about realtors. You should trust your realtor to make decisions on your behalf and also to explain things to you so that you can understand them. But I did. I trusted her, and she got me the house that I wanted at the mortgage that was comfortable for me. And it was the first house I had put a bid in on, and I got it, so I was really happy about that. And I lived in that house for 9 years before I moved to Atlanta. And so when I got to Atlanta, I just rented, for the first 6.5 years, because I was just trying to decide exactly what area I wanted to be in. And so once I decided on that area, I said, you know what? I know that I'm going to want to buy in the next year or two. I said, my son was in his senior year, and there again was a goal. He had mm-hmm. some games and things like that going on, but I knew that he was going to have a few months between the games and his graduation. So I said, you know what? Real estate school is 11 weeks. I might as well just do that at night. So I did that after I got off of work for 11 weeks. And it was probably very similar in difficulty to nursing school, because you learn a whole new language. And a lot about laws and history and, just how to be ethical and moral and, all this about fees and so on and so forth. And I'm not even a numbers person. But once I got through that program, I had, I had a study group that I was with, and we studied every single evening that we were not in school. We studied on the weekends, and we studied up until each one of us passed our state exam. We just kept going, getting back together. If there was one person left, we just kept on hitting it, because if you stop going over it, you lose it, So we just held each other to the goal. And so all of us made it across the finish line, and we've all gone on, our separate ways and things like that. But it was a great run at the time. And so anyhow, the more I talk to young Black women, the more I realize that they're just kind of like on a hamster wheel, with renting and with living in these places. And a lot of times what happens is they will move every year, because the rent is going up. And I'm
Oh,
like,
yeah.
that's just, that's not good for the kids either, as far as like stability. You want your child to, be in a school where they can go with their friends, and that they feel stable. And so I really would love to see more of our young Black women, even our young Black men. I would like to see us all become homeowners, have a little slice of the American pie, have a yard, and have a driveway that you can pull into and not have to worry about fighting for parking spaces. I know that was one of the things that really perturbed me the most, especially. And then it's scary too. If you're walking into your house at night and you have to park far off to walk in, that makes you more vulnerable to, any type of violence or, all this craziness that's going on in the world, across the world, not just, in Georgia, but just all over the place. So, I would like to see them make these steps with pride, and I would like to see them have more information about the steps and what it takes, and have somebody that's supportive. And I know that I can do that. I could step them through. Now they're gonna have some things that they have to do on their own too. They got to make sure that their credit is decent. They got to make sure that they have either a down payment or they can qualify for a down payment. But other than that, like helping them to find the perfect property for them, or helping them to go through the process. I would love to do that. I'm planning to free up some of my time when I towards the end of the year to really focus on real estate and really hit it hard and see where I can go from there with some leads and from some referrals that have been sent to me.
And so, again, in listening to how you were able to get your real estate license while working full time, while
Yeah,
getting your son through his senior year. Again, girl, you are the epitome of living life in the and. You got your strategy together. You had your team of people. You had a way of going about it. You remained determined and you had a why that was greater than just wanting to do something or just a selfish motive. You desire to help others. So one of the things that I want this conversation to be is, we can cement that one day you and I are going to work on something collectively that achieves our
yes.
mutual goal of helping women and children to get out of poverty and into generational wealth and
Let's
doing
do it.
that through owning their own home. So this is a memorialization of that. So
Yes.
we will have to use this as an accountability tool that when we recorded this episode of Living Life in the And, we committed to making that happen. So, of course, we have to put some strategy and deadlines and things around that, but this will at least serve as the impetus for holding ourselves to that goal.
I love
So,
that.
it's always great to speak with you, and every time you mention this, every time we get together, we have great conversations about substantive things and some fun stuff too.
Yes.
But we are nearing the end of the hour, so to speak, as it relates to our conversation today. And there are two more things I want to talk to you about before we wrap up. And the first thing that I always love to learn from the living Litas, those women who are truly living their lives in the end, is I like to learn how they make CEO moves. And again, one of my premises is that all women are the CEOs of their lives. So I always like to ask, how do you make CEO moves? And it has an actual meaning. A CEO move is, your circle of influence. How do you empower yourself to elevation? and how do you operationalize what you learn to optimize your outcome? So I'll go back through that so you don't have to commit that awesome memory book one. But how do you build your circle of influence, and how has that been helpful? Because you've actually alluded to this throughout the conversation, but how are you intentional about your circle of influence, and how do you build that as you evolve throughout life?
Well, the majority of the time when I get involved in anything, I generally will take a leadership role in it. And that way I can really make sure things happen and bring my points and my beliefs and my opinions, my research in to whatever it is that I'm doing. Like I said, with the board of directors, I've been the director of legislation and public policy for the last 2 years. And then recently the board slate came out, and I am the only person that's running for the president-elect. So it's looking like I'm going to be the president-elect come October. And so I'll be next in line for the presidency for the Georgia Nurses Association. And that way I can, you know, have lots more influence throughout the state and even at the national level with ANA. But I believe that whatever your desires and your passions are things that the world need. And so I always try to operationalize that and make it where somebody is the beneficiary of my duties. You know, I don't just do things just to do them, but I do take a look at what society needs and how I can help. And I do that. You know, I have, like I said, a passion for writing. And I know that that's not the passion of everybody. And I know that it's very much needed. And so I've had my professional writing company for more than 4 or 5 years now to just to fill that void, fill that need, because I know lots of people need help with writing. If it's not a school paper, then it may be some type of business, you know, paper or their business plan or anything like that. You know, I can assist with what else? I have so much experience with professional development and leadership and project management. So I have actually filed a LLC for Georgia. I had one in Mississippi already, but I filed LLC in Georgia to have a consulting company so that I can lend my skills and my experiences to others through that way as well.
Right. So who is your personal circle of influence? How do you build a kind of, I guess you can call it a board of advisors or a board of directors for you? How do you develop relationships that actually enable you to grow?
Well, that's the thing. I always look at where people are in their lives, you know, and like I said, I have spiritual mentors. I have my career mentors, my professional, you know, etiquette. I've got, you know, all different types of mentors. And then, of course, I have people who aspire to get to the levels that I am at or have been at, you know. So I also, you know, take time to mentor and to grow others as well. But for the most part, you know, when something happens, I run it by my mom and my dad. They're like night and day, you know, in their opinions and their attitudes and thinking. But I run it by them. And then also I have a aunt that I'm really close with. I talk to her often. But otherwise, you know, I have, you know, really good friends like yourself, you know, my sisters, you know, I'll talk to different people just to kind of get their opinions. But I'm also a person who don't really come to others to make a decision. I usually come once I've made the decision, you know. I know everybody is different, but I generally will come and say, hey, this is what's going to happen, or this is what I've done or going to happen on this day or what have you. You know, I've already decided I'm doing it or I'm not doing it.
Right. So, you know, it sounds like, you know, when you make your CEO moves, you create this awesome circle of influence by really educating yourself, through learning from others and then turning around and educating others. And as I've mentioned a couple of times, you know, you truly epitomize the concept of living life in the and operating, optimizing what you learn, or operationalizing rather, what you learn to optimize your outcomes, you know, in being able to use what you've learned to create something new and to help someone else move forward. So I am so excited that we finally had this opportunity to talk about your incredible journey and how you have truly embraced living life in the and, decided you wanted it all, and got your plan, your people, and your systems and determination in order to be able to achieve your ultimate why. And you keep on creating new whys, and that is awesome. So, of course, you know, I have loved this great conversation, and it's great to hear about your journey and hear about where you're going next. And the Living Life in the AN series is not only a great conversation, but a quest to find out how women can have it all. And over the course of this series, my goal, I will interview at least 100 women to have poignant conversations about how they're living their lives in the AN, and to get a good definition or peek into what does a successful life mean to the modern day woman. So this is a research project wearing a fabulous conversation. And every time at the end of the conversation, I pose the same set of questions to get the definition of success that each woman has for herself. So as I go through these interviews, it's always great to see the similarities, to see the contrasts, and overall to find the consistent themes among how women define success for themselves. So as we transition out, I want to ask you those same 10 questions. And there are no right answers, no wrong answers. And it's just the first thing that comes to your mind, or the most organic response that comes to you. So are you ready for these questions?
Yes, I am.
All right. So the first question is, what does femininity mean to you?
It means the ability to be girly, to not always have to be hard, to not always have the right answer. It means softness. It means empowerment for being vulnerable.
Great. Okay. So what does feminist mean to you?
It means that you are an advocate for women's rights, and women being able to be all those things I just mentioned, soft and vulnerable and proud of who they are, our emotional selves.
Okay. Do you perceive feminists as positive or negative? When you hear the word feminists, do you perceive that as positive or negative?
I think it's positive.
All right. What are characteristics of a good woman?
Well-rounded ability to multitask, caretaker, nurturer, and let's see what else. Able to see the big picture.
All right. What about the characteristics of a good leader?
Oh my goodness. There are so many. First of all, they have to be trustworthy. They have to have a clear vision. They have to be seen as a team player. And mm-hmm. What else? They have to be able to strategize.
Got to get it done.
Yes.
All right. So what about the characteristics of a good mother?
Oh, a characteristic of a good mother. One who puts their child's needs above their own. Someone who is stable, both mentally, physically. A person who is able to not only learn, but also speak in that child's love language to help them feel loved and grow. And, you know, of course, a provider.
Okay. All right. What does it mean to have it all?
What it means to have it all means that you don't have to choose just one subset of your life to focus on. It means that you can, you know, be that career woman and you can, you know, be in the community and you can have a, you know, run a successful household. It just means that you see your life as a bigger picture and not just the pieces of the puzzle.
Okay. All right. What, I mean, do you think women can have it all? Do you think women can have it all?
I would like to think we can.
All right. What does fulfillment mean to you?
Fulfillment means that you have found the things in life that satisfy your soul. You feel like you have gotten it right.
Okay. All right. And then finally, what does a successful life mean to you?
A successful life means that you have achieved the things that are truly rewarding to you. And that is not always tangible or financial. It could be different levels to success, but it has to do with your perception of achievement. Because we know that there are several millionaires out there that are, you know, been given every type of award that can be given, and they're still, you know, feeling depressed or like they don't have something in life. So it really depends on the person. It's individualized.
Right. Okay. Well, as always, thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. Thank you so much for contributing to my research. And most of all, I just want to thank you for living your life in the end. I could not have picked a better person to exemplify this commitment to having it all. So thank you.
No, thank you so much for the invite. I appreciate this platform. I appreciate what you are doing. And I can't wait to see what your findings are.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, of course, it'll take me a while, but I am determined I will get there. And it's beautiful to hear all of the different answers. And I know that it will be truly meaningful to understand the themes and to use that to help other women to define success for themselves. So again, I just want to thank you for joining me on this Living Letas conversation. It's always great to talk to you, and I'm so excited about being able to share this journey, or your journey rather, with others so that they can be inspired. So thank you so much for joining me on this conversation.
Okay, thank you. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right, well, awesome. Well, to those of you listening, I just want to thank you for listening in to this Living Letas conversation. Now, you know, I always want you to feel something, learn something, but most of all, you've got to do something. So I hope that you've gotten motivation and inspiration, you've gotten education, and that you've gleaned for yourself some action-oriented strategies that help you to create your own version of living life in the end. So, you know, as I always say, whether you report to a CEO or you are the CEO of your own business, You are always the CEO of you. So capitalize on your most powerful asset, the power of choice, the power to create extraordinary outcomes in your life, the power to create the life you desire and deserve. But remember, power is not in the conversation. It's in the action that you take. Don't just talk about it, be about it. Don't wait though. Wait broke the scale. Now is the best time to do what you know needs to be done. Your life is a product of your choices. Choose to live your life in the end. Hey, this is your girl, Dr. Stephanie D. Barnes. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Living Life in the End for the woman who is set on getting everything she effing deserves. I hope you learned something, felt something, but most of all, girl, I hope you are ready to do something. Please be sure to let me know what you got out of this episode. Please subscribe so that you don't miss out on another great conversation. And of course, I'd love it if you would give us a rating and review and let me know how you are living life in the end. Because remember, life is too long to live unfulfilled. Your life is the product of your choices. Choose to commit to bringing the desires of your heart to completion. Let's get everything we deserve. Girl, let's get it.